It's really great to see such a large crowd come out tonight. You know, tomorrow night has a name in our literature. You know what I'm talking about? Nittelnacht. Now, Nittelnacht, for those who know, is from the Shoresh, if I may use that expression, of Nittel or Natal. You know, the if you look in the Torah, there's a discussion of a particular day, which is called Naya Yor. That's how it's called. Nun Yud Yud Aleph, Yud Aleph Hey Resh. One of the holidays of the secular culture of Europe, which is described there as Shmona Yomim Li'achar Nittel. Nud Yud Tof Lamet. 8 days after Natal. You know what Natal means. Birth. You all know about your prenatal care and things of this nature. So, Nittelnacht, that's what it really means. Nittel means natal. That was the night of a birth of a particular member of the Jewish faith who was born. And we, in this world of ours, are still enmeshed with the majority culture here in the United States of America, which affiliates with the faith which originates in that birth. And therefore, our rabbis have cautioned us against too much association with this religion and the culture it represents. And therefore, perhaps we can re-entitle today's shiur Prenatal Care. It's the night before Nittel. We have to take care not to be taken in by the culture which surrounds us. And in my prenatal remarks, let me focus on a pasuk at the very beginning of Parshat Shmos, this week's Parsha. Vayomas Yosef v'cholecha v'chol adorahu. Very beginning of the Parsha, Yosef and his brothers died and the entire generation. What does that mean? So, I only have one book in front of me. It's the stone edition of the Chumash, so you can all look it up. Quotes here from the Svarno. As long as any of them were alive, the generation maintained its spiritual level. Svarno. So the death of the last of this generation had fateful consequences. As a matter of fact, as Rashi teaches us in next week's parasha, we read about the longevity of Levi, who lived longer than any of his brothers. As long as Levi was alive, Lohoya Shibud, as he quotes our pasuk, Vayomas Yosef v'cholecha v'chol adorahu. Next pasuk, Vayokom melech chodesh al Mitzrayim. So therefore we find that as long as any one of the 12 tribes was alive, there was a lack of Shibud. Interestingly, for those who are statisticians, there were 210 years in Mitzrayim, as we all know, Redu, and Levi lived, as the Sif Sei Chachamim says over here, an additional 94 years on top of the 43 he was when he came, till the 137. So the Shibud, therefore, was only a total of 116 years. That's all. That's a long time. You know, the communists didn't enslave our brothers and sisters for that long. But that's how it was. It wasn't 210 years of constant hard work. It seems to have been only 116 years. Yet we find in last week's Parsha, Vayechi Yaakov, that Parsha Zu Stuma. And why is Parsha Zu Stuma, the first Rashi in last week's Parsha? As soon as Yaakov died, Nistamu Einayim V'Liban Shal Yisrael Mitzoras HaShibud She'eschilu L'Shabda. So the Mefarshim all ask, when did the Shibud begin? Here it sounds like it began 17 years into the 210 in Mitzrayim. Whereas later on it sounds like 94, it's a gap of 77 years. When did it actually begin? So many Mefarshim explain It depends what we're discussing. The physical subjugation and hard work only began when Levi died all those years later. But the spiritual issues began to become more pronounced as soon as Yaakov Avinu passed away. As long as Yaakov Avinu was alive, there was still that tremendous, tremendous Kedusha. Kedusha. Oh, and I see it's over here, it's quoted again in the Art Scroll. Okay? The hearts of the children of Israel were closed in expectation of the suffering and despair of the impending bondage. But immediately after his death, the spiritual exile began. This is quoted from the Torah. And I had to want to add my point. It doesn't say that they suffered in their limbs, in their arms, in their legs, which worked so hard. It says, Nistamu einehem v'liban shel Yisrael. It was their eyes and their hearts that were closed. This is not physical, but spiritual. So the spiritual exile, if you will, became much more pronounced upon the passing of Yaakov Avinu. Yet, the truth is, it had started even before that. As we know, in the previous parasha of Vayigash, Yaakov Avinu was fearful. He did not want to go back down to Mitzrayim at all, despite the fact that people were very hungry. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him, don't worry, Yaakov, I will go down with you, I will bring you back up again. Without that guarantee, he didn't want to go. And the very last pasuk of Parshas Vayigash, which is Stuma, leads to the closing of the Vayichi, there's no paragraph over there, says, Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim be'eretz Goshen, Vayeyachazuba, Vayifru Vayirbu Ma'od. Sounds great. What a wonderful ending to this beautiful parasha. Not according to the Kli Yakar. Kli Yakar says the entire pasuk is terrible. It's terrible. Why? They were no longer regarding themselves as aliens who were sojourning in Egypt, but as permanent residents. Vayeshev Yisrael. Before they said, Lagur Ba'aretz Banu. Earlier in the same parasha. We're only as guests. Remember the Seder, the Pesach night? We're only here temporarily. We're just passing through. All of a sudden, by the time gets to the end of Vayigash, Vayeshev Yisrael, all of a sudden they're full-fledged citizens of the land. Moreover, Vayeochazuba, it's translated, they acquired property in it. But, he quotes it from the Medrash, it's Nifal, they were grasped by the land of Egypt. In other words, not just that they grasped, but they were grasped. Because the culture grasped them. They were enticed, enmeshed by the secular culture of Egypt. And as the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Vayis'arvu bagoyim, vayilmadum yimaseyem. They became mixed in with the nations, and they learned from their deeds. That's the whole point, that being in Eretz Goshen, they would be separate. That was the first ghetto which Yosef set up. But the Pasuk says, no. Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim be'eretz Goshen. That even though they were physically in Goshen, they felt conceptually in Mitzrayim. They felt themselves a part of the surrounding culture. That's the danger that we face right here. We're here in West Hempstead. West Hempstead is Goshen. It's a Jewish community, a wonderful community. If we feel that we are rooted in West Hempstead, it's not quite Yerushalayim, no, but it's West Hempstead, a Makom Torah, with a tremendous Talmud Chacham as a Rav. This is a Makom Torah. The problem is that many say, where do you live? I live in New York, in West Hempstead. The New York is the problem. West Hempstead's great. New York is the problem. Because New York State and New York City metro area, that's where the problems come in. That's where the outside influences, which are so embracing and so pervasive, threaten our spiritual health. So, prenatal vitamins. We have to just, the night before Nittel, we have to take vitamins to strengthen ourselves, not to fall into the trap of the host culture which surrounds us. That is our mandate this evening. Yes, that's my title. Secular values versus Jewish values. Note the word values. Value means it has value. And yes, some secular values have value. But other aspects of secular culture, not only do they not have value in the positive sense, but we can even say that they are negative. And they impinge on us, unfortunately, in a very negative fashion. And our neshamas, our very souls, are endangered by excessive contact with these influences. Let's explain. We'll start with the prenatal aspect. The Gemara tells us, Yisrael shebechutz laretz, any Jew who lives outside of Israel, Ovdei Avodah Zarah b'tarahim. A remarkable statement. They serve Avodah Zarah with purity. That seems like a big contradiction. Avodah Zarah is the ultimate of impurity. Here's the answer. They are influenced by the spirit of Avodah Zarah, but they do it b'tahara. They're not trying to become Ovdei Avodah Zarah, but unfortunately, it seeps in. Osmosis. You walk the streets, you hear the jingles and the music and see the trees. It's something which begins to seep into your very essence. Who can say, being an American citizen growing up in this wonderful country? And I want to preface my remarks by saying that I am a major repeater of the famous words of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichrono Livracha, that we are privileged to live in a Malchus Shel Chesed, in a kingdom of kindness. That is written in a famous responsum, in which he writes, you have to treat the government with honesty. All those, forgive me, feulish shtick that used to go on in Europe when they were dealing with despotic, murderous regimes, some people haven't figured out that the times have changed. And Rav Moshe screams and yells, we live in a Malchus Shel Chesed. We have to be honest in our dealings with the government. Such an important lesson from such a great man has to be repeated again and again and again and again. That's as far as our being law-abiding citizens, which we must be, especially because we're privileged to live in a wonderful, wonderful country that treats us so well. We have to be grateful. We shouldn't forget that those other malchios that stemmed from that individual whose birthday is tomorrow night did not treat us so well. On occasions, they burnt us at the stake. On other occasions, they killed us if we wouldn't convert. There's no need to go through the history that you know of the last 1,000 years in the European continent. And we are privileged to live as free citizens in a country that respects freedom of religion. We have to be so grateful to Hashem and to this wonderful country in which we live. Very important. At the same time, the culture is not something that we are required by law to imbibe. There's no law on the books that we are required to be a part of the host culture. We are privileged, we have every right to separate ourselves from any of the religious overtones that exist in the world around us, particularly at this time of the year. So that, therefore, we have to be careful to walk a fine line, not insulting anybody, but at the same time, you know, we're allowed to say we belong to a different religion. And therefore, all of these, quote, parties and events, which are all over the place, we have to keep a distance. Now, it's easy for me to say, because I work in Yeshiva University. There, we do all right. But you work in Manhattan. And in Manhattan, you have all these parties and I don't know what else to help to describe all these events that go on. And it sometimes takes a little guts to say, you know, I'm Jewish. And we had Chanukah already 3 weeks ago. We were finished with our parties. It's hard to say, after all, co-workers. And, you know, maybe there are different ways to say it in each and every circumstance. I'm not here to tell you how to handle your own workplace circumstance. But to give in completely and to just, you know, walk around like everybody else with the what's happening, which is directly related to a different religion, is Ovdei Avodah Zarah b'tahara. And I have to tell you, it's not only true of the holiday of this week, But the holiday, which is like the Ramah called it, Shmona Yomim Li'achar Nitl, that means he made a clear association between the Naya Yor, as he put it. It's simply a Christian event. Now, it's true, we have a secular calendar. We all use a secular calendar. You like it, you don't like it, you're using a secular calendar. So we do turn the page of the calendar. That's true. I'm going to turn it also. From 2010 to 2011. All right. Okay. That's the reality of the life that we live nowadays. But to give it anything more than that, any special events, and now this year it's Friday night. So I hope that there'll be no one in Times Square. But in other years, there are people with yarmulkes in Times Square. It's a fact. It's a reality. It's a contradiction. If you're wearing a yarmulke, your Rosh Hashanah happened a few months ago, and that's the time when you were judged by the Rabbona Shel Olam, right? And then you spend your time in a shul, davening. This is just the turn of a calendar page. It has no more significance than that. Okay, yeah, we live our lives with a secular calendar. Of course, this happened. You think, oh, I was born in this year. We give the secular calendar instead of the Jewish one. That's a reality. I'm not here to fight with that reality. I'm not here to fight with that. But the celebration of a new year and New Year's Eve in Times Square, this is something which does not belong in our mentality. It's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. It's a secular value. It's not a Jewish value. Okay. So having said this, as an introduction to my remarks this evening, I want to spend some time on what does it mean secular values and what does it mean Jewish values. And I'm going to use the word secular values in its most positive way. I don't mean the secular culture that exists here in our country today. Yes, as wonderful as the country is, and it's a wonderful country, it's a Malchus Shel Chesed. This does not mean that we are duty-bound to be obedient to the cultural mores that are either expressed informally or even legislated formally. The President of the United States of America made a recent speech, and I'm far from politics, I didn't even hear the speech, but someone came to tell me about it just yesterday, in which he is so excited about recent legislation, which has to do with the armed forces of the United States of America, and we are all grateful to the armed forces for protecting us from all kinds of enemies in all kinds of places. But they just recently changed the law, and the president is so excited that now everyone, who, no matter what he likes to do, will be able to do it in public, won't have to hide it in private, but don't tell, etc., etc. That's not binding on us. That's not binding. Maybe the law of the land. Not binding on us. We have a different Torah. Our Torah says that such actions are prohibited, and if they have to go on, okay. But not to make a big public statement that this, we embrace it, and we enjoy it, that we like it, and it's a perfectly acceptable alternate lifestyle. No. That's not our way. And we shouldn't be afraid to say quietly, politely, that's not our way. We're not throwing stones. We're not, quote, bashing. That's a dirty word. But we're allowed to have an opinion, are we not? You sometimes find that the liberals, as they're called, are the least liberal people. If you step on their toes, all of a sudden, you have to be careful about labels over here. So I'm not going to discuss that part of the secular culture. And let's be honest, ladies and gentlemen, that part of society, that problem, it's a major problem. It's a major problem because it is a battle of principle. But the much bigger problem is, you know, as we say every day in davening, v'losasurach v'levavchem b'chrei neichem. So levavchem, this is minus. This is the prenatal vitamins. So we shouldn't get involved in the other religions. Shani minus the mashka was referring precisely to that. But achrei neichem zez nus, the Gemara in Brachos tells us. That is a much bigger problem in our society. Now that's, you know, one is a small percentage of the population. This is everywhere. Everywhere. And you have to keep your eyes closed. Now, I don't mean it literally. When you drive a car, you have to keep your eyes open. But you don't have to look at the billboards. And I give you a heter, because I use it myself. If you're parked behind a bus at a red light, and what's in front of you is something which you're not allowed to see, I gave you a hat to close your eyes. When you beep me from behind, you know when they hear beep, oh, the light changed. We have rules and regulations. And yes, I know for those who are working in the city, it's a major problem all the time. For those who walk the streets of the city, it's a big problem in the summertime. We're not in the middle of December. It's freezing outside. But we don't forget what goes on here in the summer. It's a big problem. And this problem gives us tremendous danger in our spiritual welfare here in this country, the country of freedom, the country of opportunity, the country of instant access to whatever you want to see. On your internet or your, I don't know all the names of all the new machines. All I know is that what a person wants to see something which is not kosher, you just press a button and it's right in front of them. You know, when I went to high school, it wasn't that long ago, so these Yetzirahs also existed. Pornography existed. But then if you wanted to see something pornographic, you had to go into a porn shop and buy something, with paper, and that was embarrassing. Who's going to go in there? So therefore, many people may have had a Yetzirah for it, you know. They were kept away by the shame factor. Today, just close the door to your room, press a button, it's right in front of you. So people fall in. People fall in. Rabbis fall in. I'm telling you because some of the questions come to me. Marriages are threatened by this kind of stuff. It's a very serious problem. This is the secular culture which we reject. This is not secular values. This is a secular culture which we have to utterly reject and protect ourselves from it. However you protect yourselves, that's your responsibility. As the Rishonim already point out, the Sefer HaChinuch and the Ritva and others, the Torah gives specific laws, but then if you have a particular issue, you have to build your own laws. You make create your own fences. It's a very, very important thing. It's the idea of Shmartim is Mishmarti. That pasuk is found in Parshas Achrimos after the Parsha of Arayis. Everybody has to have his own way. If this is going to cause me a problem, I have to take care of it this way. Maybe I have to have a filter. Maybe I have to have a monitor system. Maybe I have to have an Issa Yichud with the internet, which I've already proclaimed, so that people shouldn't be alone in it, to put it in the living room. So, everyone has their own way. But there are problems in this world. That's not my topic for tonight. That's just my introduction, which is taking up half the shiur. Now we start the shiur. We're talking about secular values. There's no value in this. This is terrible. Values. And yes, there are secular values. We attach value to many secular pursuits. What pursuits? We mentioned before, the United States Army. We love the United States Army. They're protecting us. That's a military value. We value military force when it's used in the proper way. Absolutely. So it has value. And there's also diplomacy, right? Diplomacy. We value diplomacy when it's doing the right thing. You know, when the United States is doing the right thing and helping out Israel and things which are important, so we value it. That's secular values. Then, of course, is economics. Right? This country gives us a tremendous opportunity for prosperity. We value that too. We absolutely value that. There's nothing wrong if it's used properly, and we value it. These are secular values. Then there are Jewish values, Torah values. In our lives, perhaps our greatest challenge is to balance these two, the secular values and the Jewish values. I do not come from a place where we completely ignore secular values, denounce secular values. We denounce the secular culture which is contradictory to Torah, as I've done already tonight. But I'm just talking about now about secular values, good things which are secular in nature. And how do we balance our involvement with the Torah values and the secular values? Again, secular values which are not going to take us away from Torah in the sense that they're going to cause us to sin, but they may take us away from Torah in the sense that they're going to remove our proper focus and priority that we're required to have with respect to the Torah. That is the theme, right, we'll call it now for the second part, second half of this evening's presentation. And at the end, I'll take questions either publicly or or privately afterwards. So, the best way for me to try to describe this to you is again to go with the Parsha Shavua that we just read. Here we read about the bracha that every person gives to his children. B'chol yivarach Yisrael leimor yisimcha Elokim ke'efrayim v'chimnash. V'yosem es Efrayim lefnei Menashe. My view is that Efrayim and Menashe, these two brothers, are representative of these two parts of a good Jew's life, especially a good Jew in Golos, Efrayim and Menashe being raised in Mitzrayim. And my primary source for this is the Sefer HaMikdavar by the Netziv, which talks about this in many places, but in particular here in Parshas Vayechi, which we just read this past Shabbos. Everyone knows that when Yosef HaTzadik came to bring his two sons to Yaakov Avinu, Menashe and Ephraim, for a bracha, Yaakov did something very, very strange. Instead of giving him a bracha like this, he gave him a bracha like this. Sikeles Yodav. He put his right hand on the head of Ephraim and left on the head of Menashe. And Yosef complained. Why are you doing this, Abba? Why? It's backwards. No, Yodati ben Yodati. I know Yosef. Kamhu Yalom Megamhu Yigdol, Menashe will be great. V'yulam achiva katon yigdal mimenu, but his younger brother will be greater than him. V'zaro yemalo hagoyim. What does that mean? So Rashi explains that Yaakov was explaining to Yosef that yes, I'm giving a bracha for all generations. And Menashe will have very illustrious descendants, the most illustrious being Gideon. Gideon, the noble and brave warrior. But you know, the younger brother, Ephraim, will have even more illustrious descendants. Primary among them, Yoshua ben Nun, who is the one who is going to teach Torah to Am Yisrael and get it from Moshe Rabbeinu. What is this all about? Explains the Netziv. Yaakov Avinu, who was 147 years old, might have thought, you know, to go like this at that age, to give a long bracha is hard. All he had to do is ask Ephraim to move over to this, and Menashe to move over to the left side. That would have been much easier. Says the Netziv, no, absolutely not. Yaakov Avinu was insistent that Menashe remain on Yaakov's right knee. Why? Right represents superiority. The knee, the foot, the leg, the most powerful organ of the body physically, represents what we'll call today secular values. Worldly pursuits. In worldly pursuits, Menashe was superior. We find in his lifetime, Menashe was a person of the world, a man of the world. He really was. You go back to the previous parsha, the parsha of Miketz, where the Torah tells us, "Vehem lo yodu ki shomea Yosef, ki hamelitz ben osa." There was a court interpreter, and they didn't realize what it's all about. So Rashi says, who was this interpreter? Menashe. He was a man of the world, a diplomat, a statesman. On the other hand, we read in last week's Pasha, what was Ephraim doing all day long? Vayom Eliyos, at the beginning of the Pasha, Hinei Avicha Chola, who is this? Says Rashi. Rashi tells us, Ephraim Ayaroga Lefnei Yaakov B'Talmud. Ephraim was learning all the time with Yaakov Talmud, learning Torah. So therefore Ephraim represents Torah values. Doesn't mean he had no secular values, but his primary pursuit, his day job, if you will, was learning Torah with Yaakov Avinu. Menashe's day job was a court translator for Yosef, his father. So, when they come to get a bracha, Yaakov Avinu insists that Menashe remain on his right knee. Because in worldly matters, Menashe is going to be superior, accentuate the positive, I want him on my right. However, when it comes to Torah, which is the head, you think Torah with your head, he insisted that his right hand be on Ephraim's head. There's no way to do that without crossing your hands. There's no other way. That's why he did it. And let's take it a step further. Who are these respective descendants to whom Yaakov Avinu refers. What are they doing all day? What is Gideon noted for? Gideon was a warrior, a very brave warrior. As we said before, secular values include military prowess. That was Gideon, a very brave general who saved us from our mortal foes. This is Gideon. This is Menashe. This is the right on the worldly pursuits and matters of secular values. However, Yeshua was primarily, although he had other roles he occupied, primarily and most famously, Moshe Kibel Torah Misina Yemesorah Yeshua Yeshua Leskenim. Yeshua was that critical link right after Moshe Rabbeinu to maintain the high level of Torah in Am Yisrael. So Yeshua, therefore, is primarily a Torah personality. Gideon is primarily a military personality. So you have Torah values going through Yeshua, through Ephraim, on the right hand on his head. And you have worldly pursuits, starting with Menashe, the court interpreter, and continuing through Gideon, the brave warrior. This is the Menashe on the right leg of Yaakov Avinu. So we find each one is superior. Each one. But at the end of the day, it says, Yisimcha Elokim Kefraim v'Chimnashe, that we like every child to be successful in Torah pursuits like Ephraim, and to be successful in worldly pursuits like Menashe. But where's the priority? Vayosem es Ephraim lefnei Menashe. Ephraim has to come first. Torah has to come before secular values. I'm not discussing now secular corruptions. But Torah values and secular values, the Torah values come first. Does that mean that an individual is required to spend more time in the day hunched over his holy books as compared to hunched over his computer, whatever he's doing in his regular job? No. Ideally, the answer is yes. Spoke about this once before, a long time ago. But the Rambam tells us that a person is supposed to work 3 hours a day and study Torah 9 hours a day. The Rambam. Go tell that to your other law partners that you want to work 3 hours a day and study Torah 9 hours a day. You'll be bounced before you can turn around. I took a lot on my shoulders. I said, the Rambam is the Rambam, and of course you should try to follow him. But for me, living in today's world, I'll settle for a flip. Work 9 hours a day, including your commute, and study Torah 3 hours a day. We'll take it. Even if you study 3 minutes a day, an hour a day, but that's the most important value. It's Torah values. And even your secular pursuits, you need these secular pursuits, but they're not ultimate value. Secular values are a means to an end. A person fights a war, an army, a military. We're not militarists, chas v'shalom, who fight for the sake of fighting. Chas v'shalom. We fight for the sake of peace, for the sake of security. We have to fight sometimes. So too, when we involve ourselves in diplomacy, not because we like to be fancy diplomats, because we want safety and security. And so too, this is the most difficult to accept, when we spend all that time and effort and use our sharp minds in the pursuit of our professional careers, even that, in most instances, that is a means to an end. Now, there are some people who are saving lives, but it's generally speaking, a person who is in a secular pursuit, which is not in and of itself a mitzvah every single minute, as important as it is to support a family, yes, the secular pursuit and secular value is a means to an end, to earn an honest living, to be able to support a family honestly, to be able to support Torah institutions. That is the ultimate purpose, the Torah value. The Torah value gives value to the secular value. Torah's intrinsic value and the secular values are secondary to Torah values. That's what it says. Vayosem es Ephraim lefnei Menashe. Sure, we have Menashe. We have warriors, and we have diplomats, and we have people making a living. Most people have to make a living. Only a few people can be studying Torah all the time. But even those who are involved in those pursuits have to recognize that, yes, they're spending so much time and effort and concentration and cup in their profession, whatever that may happen to be, It's important, you have to do an honest job and do everything right. But at the end of the day, it's not a rat race to get ahead. It is a pursuit of a livelihood and a profession to be able to support a family honestly and to be able to live properly and to support Torah institutions. This is the highest value of all the Torah value. Now, I believe there's a very major difference between our orientation with respect to Torah values in contrast to our orientation with respect to secular values. Let me explain. Secular values and secular pursuits are always changing. They're always new. Each and every day, each and every year, something is new. And yes, we are required to constantly innovate in order to be successful in what we're doing. Let's take the military. Right? Let's take Gideon as the example. Gideon was the tremendous warrior who saved the people of Israel. Gideon was vastly outnumbered by his foes. So what did he do? He was so innovative, he created a new system. He gave each of his men a lantern and a pitcher and a chauffeur and said, put on a sound and light show. And they all blew the shofar, and they cracked the lantern, and then the pitcher and the lantern. The Arabs, the enemies at the time, ran for their lives. They thought there were, who knows, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people. There were really 300 men. That was all it was. What an innovative strategy. But you know what? It only works once. When it's written up in the newspapers, what happened, and you try it again, you get clobbered. You always have to fight the next war and not the last war. The example I always give is the Six-Day War versus the Yom Kippur War. The Six-Day War, Baruch Hashem, we were fighting a new war. We took the initiative, etc. The Yom Kippur War, we were fighting the last war, and there were thousands of casualties as a result. But it's not only true of war. It's true of diplomacy. Things are always changing. The new alliances, new realities, you know. Someone would come back from 100 years ago and say, wow, what's this? America? America 100 years ago was a dwarf, a little nothing. You had England, you had France, you had Germany, those were powers. We can't just come back from 30 years ago. Yeah. USSR, remember those Russia Tavis? USSR, there were two powers, right? The two powers. Where's the USSR? Crumbled. Where's the Iron Curtain? It crumbled. And the Berlin Wall crumbled. Wow. Things are always changing in the world of diplomacy as well. And most pronounced in the world of economics, in the world of making a living. Who in this room? We have a big crowd here. Who in this room earns a livelihood in the same way as his great-grandfather? Grandfather. Really? We have one person? Okay. I understand. Rabbi Schwab, there were not that many lawyers from our community two generations ago. Oh, not here. Ah, there you go. Okay. There weren't that many there either. Our grandfathers, great-grandfathers, earned a livelihood a different way. There were tailors and cobblers and they had little stores. We know that. That's how you lived. There weren't so many doctors, and there weren't so many lawyers, and there weren't that many. We're not required to earn a livelihood the way our grandfathers did. And the truth is, within our own careers, right? You have many people in this room who practices his career today in an identical fashion to the way it was practiced when it was begun 3 decades ago. Things change. But if you're in medicine, it changed. If you're in law, it changed. If you're in computers, it certainly changed. And everything's changing. You have to be up to date. You have to be up to date. If you're not, up to date, you lose, come in last. Always new things, new strategies, new realities. Things are always changing. That's how it is. That's why Gideon who is the personification of secular values in the most positive sense, as the descendant from Menashe, is a warrior, about whom it is said, Lech b'chochacho zeh v'oshatas Yisrael, use your own personal private kochos, which no one else had before, and no one else will have again, and you'll save Am Yisrael, but don't you dare do it twice. Always a new strategy. This is the very essence of what secular values are. They are temporal values, always changing. By contrast, we speak about Yoshua ben Nun, right? The loyal student of Moshe Rabbeinu. The rabbis teach us in Baba Basra, Pnei Moshe kipnei Chama, upnei Yoshua kipnei Levana. So of course it means that Moshe was greater, but it means much more than that. What is the Levana? What is the moon? It's a reflection of the sun. A Torah leader attempts to reflect the glory of the previous generation. Exactly the opposite of secular values. Secular values are always something new, and Torah values, give me the old-time religion. Give me Mamad HaSinai. Give me Moshe Rabbeinu and Yehoshua and his Kenim and the Nevi'im and Hashekness HaGdola. Give me the Tanoim and Amoroim and the Gaonim and the Rishonim and the Achron. That's my life. Because Torah is timeless. Torah is immutable. Torah doesn't change. This is the essence of what Torah values are all about. Exactly the opposite of secular values in this respect. And that's why of all the descendants of Ephraim, Yoshua is chosen. Because Yoshua represents a reflection of the glory and the radiance of the previous generation. And that's how our Torah should be. To think about it more carefully, the very names of these two paradigmatic sons, Ephraim and Menashe, their names are themselves representative of these two ideas. Look at again the Parshas Miketz. The Bechor is Menashe. Why? Ki nashani Elokim es kol amoli ves kol beisavi. How is it translated? Hashem made me forget all my hardship and all my father's household. Forget. Menashe. Worldly pursuits. Forget. Forget the profession of two generations ago. Forget the military and the economic and the diplomatic. No, forget about it. Nashani also means to move. Gir anosha. You move on to new realities and new circumstances and new strategies. That's what the word, the very name Menashe represents that. What's the second son's name? Ephraim. Why? Ki Ephrani Elokim bi'eretz anyi. What does that mean? God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. What's a fruit? What's a fruit? A fruit is the son of a fruit, son of a fruit, son of a fruit. The same fruit is in Gan Eden. Same one. It's replicating. It's just, just the same thing. They're frying, representing Torah, representing going back as far as we can to Mamad Har Sinai. So therefore, to summarize, we have Torah values, and we have secular values. The second part of tonight's shiur is not about the dangers. The values, important things. These values are always changing. We have to always be on the cutting edge, always innovating when we are involved in these values. We're involved in our Torah values. We have to try as best as we can to adhere to the classical principles given to us at our Sinai. Yes, I'm not ignorant of the fact that once in a while our Torah laws have innovation, even have certain changes in our practices as they are ordained by the great Torah leaders of every generation. Those are exceptions. We do not change for change's sake in our Torah world. Only when it's necessary, precisely to preserve the observance and to enhance the spirit of Torah in our midst. Most importantly, Vayosem es Ephraim lifnei Menashe. When we contemplate the values that we do believe in secular values. In this room, people are not hiding in ghettos far away. We're living, you know, it's a nice community, it's a little bit insulated, but we have connections, at least in our workplace, to a whole broader society. And aside from staying away from the dangers that the society puts in front of us, even when we take the good parts of the society, which we should, we have to realize that in the ladder of values, that the Torah is higher. Vayosim es Ephraim lefnei Menashe. That is so critical. They say from the Chassam Sofer that did we lose our Beis Hamikdash in Eretz Yisrael? Al shlo berchu b'Torah techila, that they did not bless on the Torah early at the beginning. On a simple level, it means they didn't say Birchas HaTorah. It's very strange. Why should that cause a churban? Chassam Sofer says, when everybody blessed his son, he said, you know, I want you to be a tremendously successful businessman, or the mother's probably said, my son, the doctor, you know, whatever it may be. And he should also be from... That's wrong. Ashlo Berchu b'Torah t'chila. When they blessed their sons, they didn't put the Torah first. They put the secular pursuits first, and they said, you know, should also be frum. That's not what we should first bless our sons. We want them to be, you know, tzaddikim, yireim, ushleimim, b'nei Torah, tamid chachamim. Yes, we should also bless them. That we should be successful in whatever pursuits they may decide to undertake. And this does not mean that when they're 40 years old, they'll be spending more time in Gemara and in Chumash than they will be in their professions. That's not what it means. But it means on the ladder of values, what they cherish, what they value, it's their Torah personalities. And they'll raise Torah families. They'll be involved in Torah institutions. And yes, they will help all of those, their homes and their institutions, by their hard work, b'zeh sapecha. But that is a means to the end, the greatest goal, the goal of Torah and Torah values. This, therefore, is what I believe to be a timely message, and based on the parashah that we're reading now, in the end of Bereshit, in the beginning of Shmos, as this transition was made historically from the patriarchs of Bereshit to the generation that was involved in Mitzrayim and ultimately came out and received the Torah at Sinai. What a transition. There was tremendous danger when they were involved too much in the society for two reasons. Either the first part of today's drasha, which was they were being unfortunately misled by the immorality of the outside society of the host culture. That's one. But number two, even in the absence of such a failure, if they place the secular values as such on a higher level than the Torah values, even if it's, we'll call it clean, there's no levavchem, there's no einechem, none of that stuff, it's clean. But they put it on a higher value than Torah. Lo bercha b'Torah t'chila, this itself is very dangerous. We have to be on the lookout as we are... How should I say it? Now, the night before Nittel, we have to first concern ourselves that we shouldn't be taken in by the host culture with all it represents, whether it be the Avodah Zarah overtones, whether it be the lack of morality in the society around us, in all of its various manifestations. But when we finish that, we start a new secular year, and secular year represents secular pursuits, we have to realize that even in the absence of those purely negative influences, if our secular pursuits overwhelm us, even in a, we'll call it a neutral way, nothing intrinsically wrong, if it takes away from our primary emphasis on Torah, this itself is dangerous to our spiritual health. So, we hope that each and every one of us will take these words to heart. We learn about secular values and Torah values, and with the wonderful rabbinic leadership you have in your community, I'm sure you'll be able to succeed for yourselves and for your families to go on in this glorious chain which started with Avram Avinu and went through Yaakov Avinu and into Yosef and Ephraim and Menashe and went through Har Sinai and to all the generations till this very day and will continue till Mashiach comes, that we will be glorious links in that glorious chain until that time when Mashiach will come. B'mheirav Yameinu Amen. If any public questions, I'll take them. Otherwise, I'll take them privately. Your choice. Yes.
Would you recommend, based on all of that, when raising children at a younger age, is it better to expose them to the positive secular values or only expose them to the religious values and figure they'll get to the secular ones at a later age?
That's a very good question. And of course, it depends on each and every family and each and every circumstance. In the yeshivas that our children go to, they have a secular education. My children, for example, went to Broyers, near where I live, where their motto is Torah Derech Eretz, and they teach, there's a fine secular education together with a Torah education. And my children were certainly exposed to that, both in their school and in their home and in the community. Yeah, of course, how much exposure? It's difficult to expose children to neutral secular values without the exposure to the net negative values. But if you can, fine. My children read books, which were not of a Torah nature. I used to pay them to read books. I felt that the most important thing is to get your child to want to read. As you said, later on, I want to read the Gemara. I used to give my kids a penny a page. Whatever they read, a penny a page. Didn't matter what. Just to get them to read. Baruch Hashem, it paid off. They used to read Hardy Boys, whatever, when they were kids. And then they got a little bit older, they started reading the Avner Gold series, which was popular a little bit later. And then they got older, they started reading Gemara. So, but they would take a book in your hand, read. Such an important, people have no patience. The fact that, I'm so gratified that some of my grandchildren, I see they're 8, 10 years old, they're bookworms. Whatever they read, doesn't matter what they read. They're reading, That's such an important thing to be involved in. We are supposed to be the nation of the book, right? So we should be involved in books. And if a child's too young to study Torah proper, if he gets into a habit of reading books, that'll be ultimately transformed and raised to a higher level of reading Torah books. So I do believe in that in general terms. Yes?
How do you differentiate between separating those secular values and Jewish values? How do you separate that from fear of secular values, whether it be general literature, whether it be music, whether it be art? Because the sense that I'm getting in this next generation is a sense of don't even touch it, don't listen to Goyish music, don't look at, that it's coming. And that's a very subtle and different kind of message.
You're 100% right. I think we can both agree that some of the secular music is Tomei. I think we can all agree to that. And some of it is not Tomei. I think we can all agree. I hope. When I grew up as a youngster, my mother, Aleha Shalom, loved classical music. And we had Mozart and Beethoven and these kind of things playing around. I can still recognize some of those tunes. That I don't think anything wrong with that. I'm not afraid of that. I'm not afraid of it at all. If you talk about some of the what's called music today, which is explicitly vulgar, I think you'll agree to that summit. So therefore, we have to draw. Not all music is created equal. Right? And the same, of course, is true of literature. Literature, if you read some of the classical works, I read Shakespeare when I was in school, it was okay. But some of the more modern, again, explicitly vulgar novels and paperbacks and however they call them today, that I think you'll agree is Tommy. So we have to draw a line. Some of it is Tommy and some is not Tommy. So obviously people disagree where to draw the line. But that's a detail. You have to first agree on the principles. That's whatever is Tomei, we should really say, no, I don't want to expose my children to this. Whatever is not Tomei, then I think it's okay. And we have to draw a line at the proper place. Yes.
You talked about secular values in terms of protection, like the military or parnassah, but I mean, full disclosure, because I'm a YU student, we talk a lot about Torah Mada, and I'm involved in education. And do you ever see where the Mada can actually influence the Torah?
100%. 100%. Many aspects of Mada are extraordinarily helpful, almost indispensable in certain areas of Torah. Absolutely. A person wants to study parts of Torah, he has to know biology, and you have to know mathematics, and you have to know physics, and you have to know chemistry. And
yeah, or there are secular values, let's say democracy. I don't know what I want to hear you talk about, which would help Torah. Help
well, democracy is. Yeah, the democracy is good. We like democracy, but some of the excesses of democracy are not necessarily good. And so, you know, the Torah is, you know, religion is not a democracy. No religion is a democracy. By definition, those are contradictory in terms. We were given a Torah by Hashem. He didn't put it up to a vote. He didn't give the Ten Commandments. Let's have a plebiscite. You know, he gave us Ten Commandments, and that's it. You got to do it. So we have to be careful that on our love affair with democracy shouldn't trample on our religious values. There's a balance.
Right, but do you see now, you said you mentioned biology. No, I mean, I wonder if there are values that you think should influence more values, or no?
You mean, you're trying to pull me away from the hard sciences into social science and humanities. Okay, I don't mind being pulled. I don't mind being pulled at all. I think that the social sciences are critical. Take psychology, for example. Psychology is critical. It's a critical, critical area of Jewish life, and all life, for that matter. And in the hands of the proper practitioners, it's extraordinarily helpful in for our society. And I deal with it on a regular basis in terms of proper marriages and proper parenting, proper communities. Critical, absolutely critical. There are some, you know, practitioners who have different points of view. There are determinists who think you have no really free will, and there are those who think, you know, do whatever makes you feel good. That's some of the latest, what I call psychobabble. We reject that utterly and completely. So again, it's the same thing. There are parts of the psychology is wonderful, and parts are not. That's like the same as I answered before. There's some which is tome, as I would call it, and some which is not. I have no way to draw the line. I think I'm staying in the way of the chont. That's also a value. But not too much, because it's not good for your health. So enjoy B'tei Avon, and thank you for coming and listening.
In a few minutes, we'll have a minute of tomorrow with us. It's great to hear. Yeah.